Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Jason, as someone who's rooted for Machado, who passionately supports the Orioles, what's your reaction to him being out and headed west?
This has been sort of a fait accompli here around Baltimore for a long time. They never really attempted to re-sign him. I guess 3 years ago, they dabbled with the idea. They got quasi-close, and then it just kind of faded into the ether. When he came back from the second knee surgery and they didn't try to sign him right then and there, everyone knew the window had pretty much passed. And if he continued to be Manny Machado, that he was going to end up getting his 300, 350, however many millions he gets somewhere else, that wouldn't fit with the model here, especially after they gave Chris Davis $161 million. They still owe him $92 million more, and he's arguably the least productive hitter in all the major leagues this year. So we knew this was coming. I wish they had done it a year earlier, Amy, and gotten even more for him. But now it's just a matter of, you know, I've been talking to my kids about this for over a year, that look, he's not going to be a part of your childhood. Like, he'll be gone before you guys are, you know, 7 and 12 years old and 14 years old respectively. It's just a matter of what they get back for him. And we go to a lot of minor league games. The cool thing about being an Orioles fan is all the affiliates from rookie league on up are within a 4-hour drive of our house, and most of them are within an hour. So I can't wait for them to make this trade, and then before I leave for training camps, to hopefully go see some of these kids make their minor league debuts for the Orioles, and then, you know, get this new era going. Zach Britton's got to be traded. Brad Brock's got to be traded. Adam Jones has got to be traded. Mark Trumbo's got to be traded. Danny Valencia's got to be traded. And then I think Michael Givens or Kevin Gausman, maybe both, need to be traded. This is a full rebuild.
Is that it, Jason?
Other than that, it should be a really boring trade deadline around here.
Okay, we'll see. Thanks, Jason. Let's talk about football now, which is, of course, your area of expertise. And the big news over the last 24 hours is Le'Veon Bell and the Pittsburgh Steelers not coming to an agreement on a long-term deal. It looks like he'll hit free agency. And I had fun asking my listeners this question on our last show. But when you think about him getting to the free agent market and you think about the contract he turned down, wowzers. So what is he worth? What does the NFL market dictate that Le'Veon Bell, who will be a 27-year-old running back, is worth when he gets there?
I could be wrong, but I've had this debate with some NFL executives, just guys with no dog in the fight, but what do you think about the Bell situation? How could he walk away from that much money? And I get it. And if he blows out his knee, you know, week four, then obviously he will have made a monumental mistake. But I believe that on the open market next year, with the cap continuing to go up and with there always being 6 to 8 teams in this league who have infinitely more cap space than they could ever spend, even if they wanted to, and teams that have over the years had difficulty attracting players, it only takes one team, Amy. And will somebody give him $16.5 million a year with 2.5 years of that salary guaranteed or so? You know, upwards of, let's say he gets 16 a year, and that's 32, 38, 39 guaranteed. I don't think it's out of the question. I really don't. And it only takes one. You know, could I see the Jets pay him $16 million a year after they were willing to pay Cousins $30 million a year and he turned them down, and they have a lot of that budgeted money left over, and you've got a young quarterback in Sam Darnold in 2019, and he needs some weapons around him, and they like their young receiver group, and none of those guys are making money yet? I could totally see it. So I do think he'll get that money. The question is, in the meantime, can Todd Gurley or David Johnson raise the bar while Le'Veon Bell has to sit out? He can't negotiate with anybody until next March. So that'll be the question. And what do the Cardinals now do with David Johnson? Because there obviously won't be a Le'Veon Bell long-term deal to negotiate off of. He's obviously still on the franchise tag. Can he go out and get, say, $14 million a year on a long-term deal with, you know, 30-ish million guaranteed, 32-ish million guaranteed? We'll see.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Jason, because that's another question. If Le'Veon Bell ends up getting this blockbuster deal that he's after, does it boost the market for running backs as a whole? Does it end up then serving as this catalyst like it has for quarterbacks and their deals, where every guy who comes behind him benefits? Or is he more of the aberration because of how much of the Pittsburgh offense he's accounted for in the last 2 years?
I think he'll still be something of a unicorn in the way that a Gurley and David Johnson, I don't know how many other guys enter that conversation who, like, you could legitimately say about Le'Veon Bell, so I'm going back to $16 million because that's what Jarvis Landry got. And a lot of people in this league feel like Jarvis Landry is a very good football player, but he's not a difference maker. He's not, his team hasn't won anything. He doesn't get in the end zone all that much, and he averages under 10 yards per catch. So Le'Veon Bell averages 9 yards a catch almost as a running back. And he's only lining up in the slot sometimes. He's catching a lot of wheel routes. He's catching a lot of screens. He's catching a lot of balls behind the line of scrimmage. And if he lined up and ran a full route tree, which he can do, in Jarvis Landry's spot and just played receiver, you don't think he could put up Jarvis Landry numbers? But he does that. Plus, he saves the quarterback's neck on third and long by chipping and selling out to block people as an extra offensive lineman. And he could win first, second, third, or fourth down for you with the ball in his hands as a running back. So when you look at all that in totality, and to your point, the percentage of the offense that he is, and especially for a team that's not Pittsburgh, that doesn't have a Ben Roethlisberger, that doesn't have an Antonio Brown, that isn't always drafting tremendous skill players like Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, Martavis Bryant, who always find these values and these gems in the draft, if you don't have all that around you, maybe you say, that's what I say, don't just one team to say, let's give him $16 million. Let's pay him like a wide receiver because who cares? We're going to throw the ball to him 100 times and we're going to hand the ball to him 250 times or whatever.
Although that does work against a guy who has a ton of carries and a lot of miles on the body, because eventually, Jason, you don't get back what you invested in him, that diminishing rate of returns because his body's taking so much pounding.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why the structure will be important and how much of that third year is guaranteed. He's going to be able to get 2 years fully guaranteed, I think, on the open market. But I go back to, if he's making 16 a year and that's 32, can he then get, you know, 40% or half of year three salary, that extra $6 to $8 million fully guaranteed at the time of signing? Now, the Steelers don't guarantee money into the third year, basically, as a rule, for anything other than the rarest of quarterback contracts. So I haven't seen the entirety of their offer. I'm privy to some of it. I don't know the full guarantee at signing, but their guarantees are generally pretty low. And the average per year isn't what he wanted. It's 15, and I continue to hear he wanted 16.5 or more. But I think the guarantee is where the money probably is more dramatically different. He's, I believe, sitting there thinking he could get between 35 and 40 guaranteed on the open market. And I would be stunned if the Steelers were higher than 28-ish.
We're spending a few minutes with Jason LaCanfora. That means the summer is nearly over. Our CBS NFL insider joining us after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Piece of news that broke today. The Rams give Brandon Cooks a 5-year extension worth roughly $80 million. So as we project forward now, Jace, what does that mean for Julio Jones?
I don't think it really means much. Julio, I mean, he got his payday. You know, I mean, Julio decided to make a deal a few years back. Which, was it every single penny he could possibly get? No, but it was better than having to play out a fifth year and getting franchised and all that stuff, you know, which is a trade-off. You're taking the bird in hand, and you're mitigating your injury risk, and maybe you're not getting every dime you would get if you played out your contract for another 18 months, but you also don't have to play out your contract for another 18 months before you know, how much real money you're going to get beyond what you came into slotted as a rookie. So I don't think it has that much to do with it. I think if Odell Beckham got 3 years, $65 million fully guaranteed, I think that's when Julio Jones' bell would start ringing and say, wait a minute, the market has just moved monumentally in a way that we haven't seen it before. Similar to what the Cousins deal has already done for, you know, and will continue to do for quarterbacks down the road. So I don't know that it affects it that much. I mean, to me, this is just another deal that's in line with what guys got on the open market. Now, Cooks wasn't on the open market, and Sammy Watkins was, and I think that $16 million a year is going to look really bad really soon for the Chiefs. And again, Jarvis Landry, I think he's going to have a hard time. I think that offense will be better, and I think he'll contribute, but I don't know that he's going to be a $16 million receiver in the slot for the Browns either, but he got that money. So Cooks is interesting to me, Amy, because two of the best coaches I've ever seen in my lifetime walked away from this kid in 2 years. So, and the Rams just gave him $16 million a year, and he's never played a snap for them. But Sean Payton said, I can live without him. And Bill Belichick on a team that Edelman's, you know, Edelman's got his suspension, and they don't have skilled players at all, and he said, I can live without him. That would give me a little pause.
Interesting points. Time will tell how it works out with the Rams. Jason, what leverage does Earl Thomas have when it comes to negotiations with the Seahawks?
It starts week one. If he doesn't, if he's not, you know, if he sits out camp, which I think he's totally prepared to do, and then also if he's willing to do, you know, what Dwayne Brown did last year, which is to say, I'm only going to show up for enough games to get my accrued season. You know, I'll be there. You know, you can see me week 10, and they start slowly, and he's not there, and they could get, you know, a player and a pick for him or whatever, then I think he has a lot of leverage. I have a hard time seeing him playing a full season this year for the Seattle Seahawks. I have continued to hear, you know, trade rumblings about him going all the way back to the combine, and when there's that much smoke, there's eventually fire. And it could have happened before the draft, and it didn't. And now I would circle the start of training camp, and I would circle roster cutdowns when everybody gets down to 53 and every general manager and every pro personnel guy are talking to every other general manager and every other pro personnel guy, and we generally see a flurry of activity. It could happen then if a contending team feels like they're short at safety. And then I would look at the trade deadline next in November. And I just, for a lot of different reasons, he's an elite enough of a player who knows they won't pay me, but somebody else will. And it only takes one team to do it. And if they're not going to do it, then I'm going to be willing to sit out at least for some period of time to try to get what I think I deserve.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
One of the things that we just found out in the last couple days is that the NFL has yet again seen an increase in revenue, a record $8 billion with a B, $8 billion distributed to the member clubs, so distributed to the 32 teams. So, Jason, I'm using my air quotations when it comes to controversy in the NFL because it doesn't feel like it has affected anything, considering all of the news around football. What does it mean to you when you hear record amounts of revenue?
I'm not surprised in the least, and I've been writing this repeatedly through the offseason when it comes to, you know, player contracts and who got what, and people saying the Cousins deal is, you know, crazy and how could you do that. And I'm like, when you take a step back and you look at this at the macro level, don't get caught up in the sort of culture war over players taking a knee and what it allegedly means and Papa John and Donald Trump. Follow the money. Everybody complains about Thursday Night Football. What did Fox do? They blew the roof off it, right?
Yeah.
They paid way more than anybody else has ever paid.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
For a product that everybody's saying is deteriorating. Then you have in early January, Verizon comes in. There's a $2 billion streaming deal. And there's going to be – eventually somebody's going to pay for the right to do – I'm going to butcher this. Is it GIFs or GIFs or whatever? All the stuff that the NFL's saying you can't do on social media right now. Eventually Twitter or Facebook or someone is going to bid to be the exclusive place where you can do that. And, oh, yeah, you can now gamble legally in like 5 states, and 5 years from now it'll probably be 25. So what does that mean for the NFL? And proprietary data. And you want all this stuff that only we have rights to? Well, William Hill or Ladbrokes or whatever, you can bid to be the official, you know, the only. We're only going to give one of you guys betting powers in stadiums. What do you think that would go for?
Well, knowing the NFL, it would be some shocking number that would blow us all away. Jason, let's talk about what's right in front of us. Training camps! They're almost here, which is crazy. But I always enjoy asking you this question. Blank canvas, what are some of the storylines that you're all jazzed up about as we get back to football?
I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and try to, you know, reinvent the wheel or get too cute. It's all about quarterbacks, right? I mean, we know that's what this league is. And we just set a record with five of them going in the first round. So a lot of my time this preseason will be spent seeing those kids in practice and then in at least one preseason game. And there's that constant need. And you couple that with all the quarterbacks who changed locales, right? Kirk Cousins. And he doesn't want to say it's Super Bowl or bust, but when you get a record-setting contract for a team that, you know, was on the cusp of a Super Bowl last year with Case Keenum, a journeyman vagabond at quarterback, I got news for you, a $30 million man. It's Super Bowl or bust. And Tom Brady at age 41, can he win another MVP? And Aaron Rodgers off of a year where he didn't play, can he lift that team? And I mean, to me, those are the storylines. I mean, Russell Wilson, he's got 2 years left on his deal. You know, but nobody even talks about it. You know, like nobody talks about what Russell Wilson's going to be worth a year from now, and how does that play out in Seattle with everybody who's already left, and what does that mean for Russell Wilson? Can they finally run the football since Marshawn Lynch left? Does he finally have an offensive line? Does he start seeing his football mortality with all the hits he takes? Deshaun Watson coming back. All those guys got hurt last year coming back from injury. John Gruden and Derek Carr, how does that work? Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, right? Will he live up to the hype? You've got Winston, and, you know, I don't think he can salvage himself in Tampa at this point. I don't know that the Glazers could ever put, you know, money in his pocket again on a long-term deal. But what does his future hold? And does Mariota take a step forward? And Trubisky with Nagy, whatever we're supposed to call him today, how does that play out? You know, there's a lot of hype there, too. I'm not sure I'm buying that one, but we'll see. It was Jared Goff an anomaly, and Garoppolo with Shanahan for a full season. I mean, that's just off the top of my head, but that probably covered half the league, you know? Ben angling for another contract. Here in Baltimore, where I live, how much of the field does Lamar Jackson see and how soon? I guarantee you he sees the field some in week one. It's just a matter of how much. So, and Darnold and Rosen, how quickly do they see the field? And Baker Mayfield and, you know, Josh Allen. So that's what it's all about. We saw more quarterback activity this offseason via trades, free agent guys changing teams, playoff quarterbacks changing, right? Keenum, Taylor, Cousins, guys who've been to playoffs last year or the year before, flat out changing teams basically, I mean, in their prime. I mean, to say that Keenum had a prime, but, I mean, he had a tremendous year. And then you've got all the five kids drafted, and then you've got teams that didn't make decisions like the Giants. Will they rue the fact that they could have had any of these quarterbacks and they took none of them, hoping that a running back can save their quarterback? I mean, I just think it's delicious subplot after delicious subplot.
Right. But you actually had me at quarterback about 3 seconds in. You should see this giant grin on my face right now. I can't wait. Jason Lockin, former CBS NFL insider, back from vacation. Summer's over, man. Get to work. It's just really good to hear your voice again. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
Likewise, Amy. My pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Runner there by Beverly is off the mark, no good. Rebound, Ginobili. Front court, right, Leonard. Leonard taking the right side against Ariza. Turnaround jumper at the baseline is good for Kawhi Leonard. He's got six, and the Spurs take a two-point lead. 39-37 with 2:04 to go in the second quarter. Harden starts to break the other way, drives all the way in. His shot is blocked by Danny Green. A track down block by Green. Here comes Leonard the other way. Kawhi on the right side will fire a right wing three. Kawhi not. Kawhi Leonard with a three-pointer to give the Spurs their biggest lead tonight. 9. It is 50-41. Leonard's got 15.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Breaking news regarding Kawhi Leonard. We've been waiting for this, right? Well, this could be it. The Spurs Radio Network, Bill Schoening. No, it's not NBA season, but that should whet your appetite just a little bit. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Here's what is all over social media at this hour. According to Yahoo Sports insider Shams Charania, San Antonio and Toronto are engaged in serious talks on a trade centered around Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan. the shooting guard who has only ever played for the Raptors in his career. He just wrapped up his ninth season in the NBA. He was drafted by the Raptors in 09 as a 20-year-old. And now here he is, potentially heading to San Antonio. Now, this is all we know, that the Spurs and the Raptors are engaged in serious trade talks.
You're kidding.
But the deal would be Kawhi and DeMar as the centerpieces. There could be a couple of other guys, contracts moving around, maybe some money. But these would be the big names. This would be the shakeup. Again, this is from Yahoo Sports. Shams Charania, who essentially took over the website and the reporting when Adrian Wojnarowski departed for a different network. DeRozan last year, 80 games, so pretty much the entire season, he averaged 34 minutes per game. His point totals, 23 last year, 27 the year before, but he averaged 23 points per game last year to go along with 5 assists and 4 rebounds per game. Now, we all know what happened with the Toronto Raptors. Second straight year, they're swept from the Eastern Conference playoffs, from the second round of the playoffs by the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Dwayne Casey takes the fall. Now, I agree they needed some change. I've been a bit surprised that there haven't been more changes for Toronto, that essentially they promoted from within. If you think your coaching staff is the problem, then why are you promoting from within? Meanwhile, Dwayne Casey goes on and gets a contract with the Detroit Pistons, but that's a side note. The roster itself hasn't changed a whole lot in Toronto, almost as though the Raptors organization really believes that Casey was the problem, that it's just about a different voice. Now, I am on board with the change in leadership because the way that they failed to respond in that series against Cleveland, I'm not suggesting they were going to win the series, but the fact that they showed no heart, no life, no pulse, for heaven's sakes.
I'm sorry.
When their playoff lives were hanging in the balance. They didn't bother to fight back. And so that really bothered me. I agree, a lack of leadership there. But it's not just Dwayne Casey. This was a locker room problem as well. Now, this is a record season for the Raptors, just in their rearview mirror. We're talking about the most number of wins in franchise history at 59, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, the home court advantage. They were fourth in the NBA in scoring, just shy of 112 points per game. They shared the basketball. They were in the top 10 in assists per game. And I know LeBron James and the Cavaliers are a major part of that, but there were other problems there. More mental, more toughness. More about leadership and inspiration and motivation and desire. Those are intangibles that I don't know changes just with a head coach who's promoted from within. However, you bring a Kawhi Leonard into the mix. Could that be the change that would catapult the Toronto Raptors forward? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Please let me know what you think. It's not basketball season. I get it. But this is a big deal. Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports. I got to give him credit because he's the one that just set NBA social media on fire. You should see almost every tweet right now. At least the people I follow, Twitter's quiet. Except for those who are reacting to this report that the Raptors and the Spurs are engaged in serious trade talks. Centered on Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan. And Shams is citing league sources. Trust me, he's got them, just like Woj does.
I can't tell you what I know because I'm not allowed to.
So A-Law Radio to find me on Twitter or on our Facebook page. You can weigh in as well. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line here at CBS Sports Radio. Brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. If you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance too, you can get it all at geico.com. Again, 855-212-4227. Kawhi Leonard is still one of the best two-way players in the NBA, we think. The problem is he only played in 9 games last year. I don't think that the way the relationship deteriorated between Kawhi and the Spurs is necessarily a huge deterrent. I still say after a year away, he's got some fresh legs. We believe he'd be completely healthy. It just, he got his feelings hurt. He was upset that his teammates didn't have his back. And he isolated himself. And it just snowballed. It got worse and worse. For an organization like the Spurs, who are all about the team, team first, who like reluctant superstars, who are about guys accepting roles for the good of the organization, and they win. They win consistently because they're willing to make the sacrifices that it takes and because of their fearless leader. But with the crack in the dam, the first one, and then it wasn't plugged and it wasn't fixed and feelings got hurt. And for Kawhi Leonard, as little as we know about him in terms of his personality and how he handles things, maybe it was a surprise to a lot of people. He doesn't talk much. He doesn't open up. But he's demanded a trade as much as he can demand a trade with time remaining on his contract. And from all accounts, at least those people who would have access to insider information, by all accounts, the relationship is relatively broken. Now, the Lakers did not offer the Spurs what they were asking. So there's the intriguing part. The Spurs knew that the Lakers wanted Kawhi Leonard in a big way. And so they asked for the sun, the moon, the stars, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And the Lakers weren't willing to do that, even if it might have convinced LeBron James any more quickly. I mean, it took LeBron 24 hours, right? But they didn't know that at the time. So the Lakers were being held hostage almost by the Spurs, who knew how desperate they were to get Kawhi. So the Lakers didn't bite. But what we found out is that the Spurs were, they were more on board with the idea of trading him. Remember, R.C. Buford said that their first choice would be to mend those fences, fix the problems. I mean, you even had Greg Popovich fly out to Los Angeles to meet with Kawhi face to face. But Kawhi hasn't changed his tune, at least as far as we know. And so the Spurs have been taking phone calls and fielding offers. In your opinion, is this enough? Now, I'm certain that there are more pieces to this. I can't imagine Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan straight up. But that's just me. I think that Kawhi's a better defensive player and also a bigger body, more versatile as a scorer, more difficult to stop. But DeMar DeRozan can also score in bunches. It's just been a tough go for any of the Raptors in the postseason. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Chris is in Richmond, Virginia. Chris, what's your reaction to this news?
Well, I think it changes, like you said, the balance of powers. I think it adds the Spurs into the mix now because they didn't have Leonard last year, and now all of a sudden you're getting a 23 guy. That's obviously a plus, even though they lost a couple pieces, but they also got Lonnie Walker out of University of Miami. He seems like he's doing really well in the summer leagues. And if you add that to Toronto, no one was really talking about Toronto in the East. They were always talking about Boston and Philly. And now all of a sudden you got Kawhi Leonard over there, and he obviously can play D. And I don't think they should have got rid of Dwayne Casey. I think, you know, anytime you have a franchise record, even though you get bounced in the first round, I know they weren't playing with heart, but they were playing against, you know, arguably the greatest player in the country. I mean, the world.
I don't care. Show up. Show up anyway.
That's Casey's fault, though.
What?
I don't know if that's Casey's fault, though.
No, I just said it's not Casey's fault. I blame that on the players. They're the ones who are out there.
And that might be Rosen. I mean, Rosen seemed like he was the face of the franchise. And, you know, if they're getting him out of there, you know, and putting Leonard in there, I mean, that's obviously an upgrade. You know, and all of a sudden, I think you have another East head out there. You know, I think you have, you know, somebody can contend with Boston and Philly easily. So that's just my opinion.
All right, Chris, thanks so much for weighing in. I appreciate your call from Richmond.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know that I agree with Chris that nobody was talking about Toronto. I think there was some cautious optimism that this might be a different run for the Raptors. They were the number one seed. They got a lot of people paying attention because of those 59 wins. The problem was late in the regular season, they had a couple of games against the Cleveland Indians. It's hump show. It's just what you get. They got a couple of games against the Cleveland Cavaliers in which you thought, uh-oh. Remember, they had one game in which they were way, way, way up, and then Cleveland came back and won in overtime. It was this crazy rally. And then there was another game against the Raptors in which the Cavaliers just housed them. And so those two games to me were eyebrow raising. I remember doing a couple of shows after those games thinking, Toronto, this was your opportunity to send a message.
Whiny.
This does not bode well for what's to come. You want that one seed. The Cavaliers faded to four. Okay, be careful what you ask for. But if you're looking for a warm-up, if you're looking for a gauge, if you're looking for a way to determine that this season will be different, that this playoff run will change your franchise, the course of your franchise, that this time it will end differently, I mean, what are you worried about the Cavaliers knowing what your secret plays are? You're worried about them stealing hand signals? You're worried about them figuring out your signs? I mean, come on. Don't tell me that you are out there loafing it because you don't care. Stop it. This is your nemesis. It's the only team that you want to beat because it's the one you can't beat. And so late in the regular season, when they should have been gearing up for the playoffs, instead they were doing the opposite and it didn't bode well. But otherwise, Toronto had an incredible franchise record setting season. People were nervous, and I can understand why.
No, well, that's how we do in Toronto.
DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if it's straight up, but those would be the centerpieces of a trade that right now is being talked about. The powers that be in San Antonio and Toronto, breaking news from Yahoo Sports. Under cover of night, in the darkness in Toronto and San Antonio. Uh-oh. Spaghetti-o. It's our hump show. Oh, all that rhymed. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.